And we're holding on page Yud Ches in Megillah, about the middle of Os Yud Ches, fourth or fifth of the wide lines. We were in the middle of learning about what happened with Luke's son and Teresh's plot, and how Hashem orchestrated the whole thing in order to eventually lead to Mordechai's rise. So when the pasuk said that Mordechai found out about it, so Amar Rabbi Chiya ba'Aba, or Rabbi Yochanan, Bixen v'Teresh Tausim, Bixen and Teresh were Tausim, meaning they came from some country called Tausi. Some people identify it with Taushish, like we find, for example, that Yonah tried to run away today or whatever. So they were talking to one another in their Tursi language. So they're figuring that nobody's going to know their language. They were saying one to another, ever since this one, Esther, came to the palace, we haven't seen any proper sleep. Because they're shomrei asaf, where Marsha points out, the word saf actually has a double meaning. It means the threshold, so it means that they're the guardians of the door of the palace. But it also means, saf also means a bowl. By the Korban Pesach. So it also means a bowl to bring the king a drink when he's thirsty. So ever since Esther came, he's very much into her, so therefore he's always calling for her to have relations with her, and that makes him thirsty, so we're constantly having to bring him drinks. So they said to one another, come, let's put some poison into his bowl, into his cup of water that we bring him, Kadesh Yamus, in order that he'll die. They didn't know that Mordechai was one of the members of the Sanhedrin who had sat in the Lishkas HaGozis back in the day. And he knew all 70 languages, which the Gemara mentions in other places, that the members of the Sanhedrin have to be familiar, at least they have to be familiar enough to be able to understand them. Maybe not to speak the languages, but at least they have to be able to understand the languages. So Mordechai was like that. We've talked about before what it says that Mordechai had an unusual talent in that. He's able, even when people are speaking in a mixture of languages, he's able to decipher it. But therefore he understood their language. Which, by the way, we had in an earlier part of this Masechta where there was an opinion of one of the Tanoim, Reb Meir or Reb Yosi ben Damascus, different opinions, whether in fact it wasn't like that, and rather that Mordechai found out about it through a Ruach HaKodesh, which that was one of the attempted proofs that the Megillah was written with Ruach HaKodesh. So the other one says, after all, my Mishmar and your Mishmar are different. Now, Rashi explains that means jobs. We have different jobs. So how are we going to manage this? Page Yud Ches, towards the end of Os Yud Ches. So Rashi explains that Mishmauti or Mishmautecha means jobs. So they have different jobs. So in that case, then how are they going to, how are we going to arrange this? Marsha says that no. I mean, what does jobs have to do with it? It would mean that they had different shifts. They're on duty at different times. So how are they going to be able to coordinate this? The Rif over here gives a long explanation of how we could still reconcile Rashi's points, and he explains the kitzur, they would have to time things very exactly, so it's not just a matter of making sure that they can coordinate with each other time-wise, but also that neither of them is missed in their job, and therefore, so that can well bear out what Rashi is saying, that they're saying our jobs are different. Anyway, Amalei, so the other one said, Ani eshme b'shmautu b'shmautecha. Fine, I'll do my job and your job, or my shift and your shift. That's when the pasuk says, the matter was searched, the matter was investigated, and it was found. What's this expression? Vayimotze. For one thing, if it means the two of them, Vayimotzu, for example, so it means, shaloi nimtzim b'shmautu, it means they found that he wasn't in the place or on the job or on the shift that he was supposed to be in, and therefore they put two and two together and realized that something's going on over here and that they're plotting against Ahasuerus. Well, that's right. So because Mordechai mentioned it, then therefore they checked into it more carefully. Like this, in other words, if Mordechai hadn't told anything to Esther, then they wouldn't have thought, okay, you know, it happens sometimes or whatever, a person is late or a person is in the wrong place at the wrong time. But like this, they checked it out and it all corroborated what Mordechai had said. Why it is, by the way, that Mordechai worked to save Achashverosh. I mean, we learned already what an anti-Semite Achashverosh was. On the face of it, maybe it would have been better off without him, and that way also Esther would be free to go home. They say that Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, as a child, was asked about this, and he answered, well, very simple, better two dead Rishoyim than one. But anyway, on a more balabatishal level, I mean, first of all, having Mishkal B'Shlemish HaMalchus and all that, you never know if Achashverosh does get assassinated, especially if they know that Mordechai could have somehow prevented it, then there's going to be terrible trouble for the Yidden, and you never know whether the next king is going to be any worse, et cetera, et cetera. See. Okay. Next. The pasuk says, "Achar advarim eila," after these matters, "Gidal HaMelech Achashverosh," then Achashverosh raised up Haman. So, achar mai. So, after what? Meaning, in other words, the word achar means something that happened as a result of something else. So how does what we said, what happened with Mordechai saving Achashverosh's life, how does that lead to that after that Haman is elevated? So, Omar Rava, achar shabora akadosh baruch hu behitim refuah lamaka. Means after Hashem had already created that this should be a refuah for the maka that's going to come. Because later on, now we have, you know, this is at the end of Perek Beis of the Megillah. Meanwhile, you come finally to Perek Vav and you find out how this almost forgotten incident from years earlier is the catalyst that makes everything start happening, that makes Haman start being degraded and Mordechai start being elevated. So after the Eibeshter prepared that, is when the hikdim refuah lamaka, after he brought the cure before the blow, then Haman could be elevated. We're talking about, well, so this happened not long after Esther became queen, which was in Achashverosh's 7th year. Haman's gzeira was in the 12th year, so we're talking like 5 years later. Okay, I mean, maybe you don't have to say necessarily that maybe Bigson and Teresh's plot was like, you know, was that shortly after Esther became queen, but still, based on what we just said, it wasn't that long after. See, it's still talking a good few years in between. Okay. The Amr of Shimon Lokish, Eina Kodesh Baruch Hu Makes Yisrael, Elim Kein Maktum Abor Lahem Refuah Tchila. Hashem never strikes the Jewish people unless he first preempts it and creates the Refuah first. Shenemar, as the passage says, Kirofi Yisrael, when I heal Yisrael, the Achakach, and only then, as the passage continues, the Nigla Avon Ephraim, then the Avera and the penalty for it of Ephraim, representing the Aseres Hashvatim in general, will be revealed. So first there has to be the Rofi, and only then the Nigla Avon Ephraim. Avol ha'ovrik achavim ain't a cain, but Rish Lakish continues with the Goyish nations. It's not like that. Elamaka oisan v'achatach roi for oisan. First Hashem hits them. First Hashem strikes them, and then if it's appropriate, if they deserve it, He heals them. Shenemar, as we find the pasuk, when Noga Hashem as Mitzrayim, Noga is the Rofi, Hashem will strike Mitzrayim, striking and healing in that order. Mitzchila Noga is v'achatach Rofi. Why is there that difference? Marsha explains the reason is, because Hashem promised that He's never going to destroy the Jewish people. Therefore, if there's going to be a Makkah which is threatening to destroy us, Rahman al-Tzlan, then there has to be a Refuah first. On the other hand, with the Goyim, Hashem made them no sin with the Goyish nations. Hashem made them no such promises. So He'll send them the Makkah. If they deserve, if they do tshuva, then He'll bring them a Refuah, and if not, then they won't get the Refuah. So that's why that order. In fact, he points out that in that pasuk about Mitzrayim that the Gemara has just quoted, it continues, "V'shavu ad Hashem," they will return to Hashem and they'll do tshuva. As the psukim go on to mention that they're going to start serving Hashem. So we see that it's that order. First, Hashem strikes them, that motivates them to do tshuva, and therefore there's the rafay, and then things continue from there, as it says in the psukim. Okay. Says about Haman after Mordechai refused to bow to him, it was contemptible in his eyes, the shloyach yod b'Mordechai levadei, to just stretch out his hand and take revenge against Mordechai personally. So the pasuk says, first it says, they told him the nation that Mordechai is from, and then he decided to wipe out all the Jews. So, Amar Rabba, b'tchila b'Mordechai levadei, it went like this. First, he was angry at Mordechai himself and thinking that he is going to avenge himself against him. Then he's thinking that he's going to take revenge against the people of Mordechai, which means, who are the people of Mordechai? His fellow Chachamim. which, in other words, the word am, just like we have, for example, in various places in the Torah, when it says mitzvahs involving amcha or amischa, it means am she'itcha, the people who are with you, who are like you, fellow shomer Torah or mitzvahs. So they, same way over here, am Mordechai means the people that Mordechai is associated with most closely, namely his fellow chacham. And then he decided that's not enough. And then he decided to take it out on all the Jews in general. There is the idea, there's a sikha that the Rebbe talks about, one of the sikhas from this week's project, look at the sikhas that talks about, from Pelech Chaf Aleph, that talks about the psukim that Mordechai heard from the three children. As we know, the famous story in the Medrash, Al Tirim with Pachat Pizza, and Utsura to the Sofar, about Zikna Anihu, and Mordechai is very happy about that. So in the course of the sikha, the Rebbe makes the point over there that the reason, what Taka gave Haman the idea that because Mordechai personally didn't want to bow down to him, therefore he's going to take it out on all the Jews, there was a cheshbon over there. Because he realized, why is Mordechai not bowing? Because he himself is an Avodah Zorah, he's wearing an Avodah Zorah on his chest, as the case may be, and therefore Mordechai is not going to do that. And he realized it's not just Mordechai personally, and it's not even just the Chachamim who will also not show him any cheshivos and not bow to him. No Yid is going to, because every Yid has a pint of a Yid, and as Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, any Yid instinctively is going to stay away from any, from even a trace of Avodah Zarah. So that's why now he figured in that case, and Noshim Noshim Batach, every Yid equally has the same pint of a Yid, and therefore if it's being shown most openly by one person, by Mordechai, but nevertheless you find it within every Yid, and therefore he's going to take, and there, and therefore he's going to take measures based on that. So in that sikh, actually, that Rebbe describes, it's very, very fascinating. They represent three different types of, three different things that a person might be worried about, and three different levels of bitachon that a person has in Eved. First, where there's an actual pachad, an actual shoya, an actual disaster that's threatening, and we say, and when we say, al tira, don't be afraid, without even a reason. Then you have where there's not yet a problem, but there's Eitza and Dover, they're plotting something, and nevertheless we realize Ki Monukale, that we have the talk and that the Eibishter will frustrate their plots, Ki, and the reason Ki Monukale. And then you have the third one, that even, we're not even talking about troubles per se, we're just talking about things that happen as a result of natural things. People naturally get old, people naturally get decrepit, things fall apart, etc. And nevertheless, the Yid has the tachan that the Eibishter looks after things and he carries and so on and so forth. It's a fascinating and then beautiful sikha, well worth learning. And now they have on the Project Lakota Sikha's website, they have English translations of them, and they have above all the ones that are in the project, they have audio classes, etc. There's many different ways to learn it and to absorb it. There were three, yeah. That's what Rebbe makes the point in the sikha over there, that they represented three different stages in a kid's chinuch and in a kid's development of the samuna and betochen and the ebeshev. And that's, he also explains, that's why Mordechai is so happy. He realized now that the pint of the yid is alive and well by the children, and they're not just keeping it in the cheder, they're taking it out into the street. So therefore he realized in that case that it may be right now dormant, as we're going to say soon. Haman himself pointed out that it seems to be dormant by the yidin, but Mordechai realized, no, it can easily be reawakened because the children are not just keeping it in the cheder, they're bringing it out into the street. Yeah. Next, the pasuk says, "Hipil pur hu hagodol." So Haman made a pur, which is a lottery, to figure out what date would be the appropriate day for his gzeira. So he's going from day to day, from chodesh to chodesh. The Targum, by the way, and the Megillas Esther goes in detail over there how first he's trying which day of the week, but he finds every day of the week there's something about it. There's some schus that the Jewish people have in connection with that day, and therefore it's not going to work. So he tries the month, and most of the months have Nissan has Korban Pesach, Iyar has Pesach Sheni, etc. So he's going through each one, and it's not working out. Tonne, but then we learn in a Braisa, Kivin Shenochel Purba Chodesh Adar, when it came out in Chodesh Adar, Samach Simcha Gdola. Then Haman was very happy. Omar, he says, Nofali Purba Yerach Shemes by Moshe Rabban. Look at that. It came out in the month when Moshe, their Rebbe passed away. So therefore, so the Jewish people have lost their protector and they've lost their schus. But Haman did not know he didn't know that Moshe was not only passed away on Zayin Adar, which that we can calculate from Psukim, and Haman was smart enough to be able to do that, but also that Moshe was born on Zayin Adar, where that we only know from Torah Shebaal Peh, because you have as the Gemara mentions that as we learned in Rosh Hashanah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mamala Shnisein Shal Tzadikim Miyoyim Liyoyim, that the Eibishter fills up the years of tzaddikim from day to day. Sometimes we see it openly in our world, sometimes less so, but Moshe Rabbeinu was one of the ones where it's openly so, and therefore that if he passed away Zayin Adar, he had to have been born on Zayin Adar. So Haman was unaware of that. So Rashi uses the expression, Rashi says, Kedaihu yom haleda sheyichaper ala misa. It's appropriate that the day when Moshe was born will be mechaper for the day that he passed away. Now, it's an interesting expression Rashi is using, to be mechaper. What do you mean to be mechaper for a day that he passed away? There's a sicha in Chelek Chavod where the Rebbe discusses it and says like this. Usually we say, by tzaddikim, usually we say, yom ha-mavis miyom hivolder, the day a person passes away, when he's accomplished his whole ma'isa v'avodasa in this world, is in a way greater than the day when he's born, because he comes into the world without having accomplished anything, and he leaves it with a life full of accomplishment. But meanwhile, we have by Moshe Rabbeinu, already when he was born, Nismala Abayis Kula Ura, the whole house is filled up with light, showing already that when he's born, he has already actualized all that potential that he's going to bring into the world throughout his life. The fact that he eventually had to pass away is kind of a negative thing. It was as a result of Mei Meriva over there, but nevertheless, we're saying the Yom HaLeda, when he already came into the world with the full accomplishment of his life, is Mechaper for that Yom HaMisa, and makes it, in a sense, that ever goes on to say, makes it, you have the Gemara in Sota that says, Yesh Omen Moshe Rabbeinu Loi Mes, Malahalan Omen Meshamash, Afkan Omen Meshamash, that he's still alive and serving the Eidoshev, that also relates to this, that the Yom HaLeda is Mechaper, like literally it wipes away the Yom HaMisa and makes that it wasn't really a Yom HaMisa after all. So now, Haman was unaware of all of that, so that's why he was happy, and if he had known that, then he wouldn't have been quite so happy. So by Yom HaHaman LaMelech HaKashverosh, so he says to HaKashverosh, Yesh Na'am Echad, there's one nation, and he tells HaKashverosh a whole thing. But there are, by the way, Mephoshim. Now here in the Gemara, we're going to see that Haman is explicitly telling Ahasuerus what nation he's talking about and what kind of strange and outlandish and antisocial and so forth in his eyes practices we Jewish people do that makes it that Ahasuerus should agree to destroy them. There are actually Mephoshim who explain that if you look in the simple psukim, you actually don't really find that. And you can actually say that Haman was deliberately being cagey about it and pretending like he's and just sounds talking about a nation without even specifying which one, and that way at least kind of gives both him and Ahasuerus some plausible deniability. Enough, like you have, for example, with the Nazis in Machshamon, where they, even when they made all their conferences and whatnot, and the final solution, whatever, they never talked about the Goliath, but before this, we're gonna go kill Jews. So here you have with Haman and Ahasuerus something similar, and that also explains, Mephoshim say, why later on in Perek Zayin, when Esther tells him that my nation is threatened with being destroyed, with genocide, he's shocked, Miuzev Ezahu, because on the shock level, Haman hadn't actually told him that there's a particular nation that he actually wants to wipe out. But anyway, here the Gemara obviously is not taking it that way, and Rashi explains actually based on everything we don't have in the Psukim over there what Ahasuerus is saying to Haman, but based on the wording that Haman is using, we can derive from it what Ahasuerus was saying, such that Haman had to reply with each clause of what he's saying. Marsha points out because there seems to be a lot of repetitiveness in what Haman is saying. Why the double expression? So the Gemara is understanding that each of these is a separate argument that Haman is making against the Jews, and therefore each time when Ahasuerus points out a possible objection, then Haman counters it with the next statement of his. Amar Rabba, Leta de Yada Lishna Bisha Kahaman. There's nobody who knew Lashon Hara, who knew how to present an argument, an anti-Semitic argument like that, like the way Haman did, as we'll see. Amalei starts by telling Ahasuerus, Ta'i Tavi Gori Bahu. Come, let's start up with them, with the Jews. Amalei, so Ahasuerus answers him, and again, we don't have this in the Psukim, but we infer it from what Haman said. I'm afraid of it. She called Miss Yada Bahoin of a KMO Say Modin. Anybody who starts up with the Jewish people, the Eidoshter punishes him. Omale, so Haman starts out by saying Yeshnoi, which Yeshnoi also means Yoshi, mina mitzvahs. They've fallen asleep from the mitzvahs. In other words, he's saying the Jewish people are not being as careful with mitzvahs as they should be, and therefore they've forfeited the protection that they would normally have from the Eidishu. Meaning, in other words, Maharsha says, the reason for the drasha is otherwise, why Yeshnoi? Yesh Amecha. Yeshnoi, therefore we darshan, and it means also Yoshnu. And it means actually both. It's also Maloshin Shinui, that they're changing from the way they should be behaving. They have a certain way that Hashem tells, we have a certain way that Abishah tells us to act, and Haman is accusing that the Jewish people have changed that and they're not behaving according to that as well. So, which in fact, by the way, in that sicha about the three children and the psukim, there is the point that when it mentions over there, after all, Mordechai is very worried and sacked the Efer and all of that, because after all, when we learned before, we said that the problem is shtakvul atzelem, so Mordechai taka is worried. It seems that the pintle yid, by at least some yidden, has gotten obscured. How else would they have bowed down to the tzelem? And that's why when he heard from these children, then he was very reassured. But meanwhile, Haman is using that as, yeah, in that case, then yeah. So Achshverosh says, yeah, but at least there are the rabbis among them, and they keep mitzvahs, and they'll daven for Rachmanis for the Jewish people. So Haman continues, no, Yeshne am echad. They're all one nation. In other words, that even the Maharsha says it means the rest of them are not doing mitzvahs. The Rabbanon have also got slacked off on mitzvahs. They're also Yeshne. So you don't have to worry about them either. But there are, of course, many other explanations on this also. That Al-Bab gives a very interesting one on Am Echad. He says, you know, like this, you hear all the time, one of the anti-Semitic tropes that you hear all the time is the international Jewish conspiracy and the elders of Zion and all that nonsense. So he explains the Am Echad in that vein as well. They're one nation, so no matter how much they scatter, they're scattered among all the peoples, they're in cahoots with one another, and they're always of one mind to plot against us. So there's nothing new among all the anti-Semitic arguments they hear. Haman already had them a long time ago. So that's Amechavein. V'shem Atoma Esa Korcha B'malchus. So Haman continues to Achashverosh. You're going to think if we wipe out the entire nation, then there's going to be a bald spot in the kingdom. In other words, there's going to be one particular province is full of Jews, and therefore it's going to be emptied out of its people. No, he says, don't worry, Mefuzorim Hein Ben Amon, they're scattered among the nations. There's no concentration of Jews in any one place large enough for it to be noticeable in the population statistics, even. You're going to say, at least though, I'm getting some benefit out of them. At least they're like, hey, it's like a garden or a tree or whatever that you get paid us from. No, therefore he uses the word, yeah, taxes and whatever. Yeah. And they contribute to the valuable things to the kingdom. No, Haman claims I'm a furdad, meaning computers who say, no, it's a paid us. Mefurdad is not just separated because the word mefuzah already covers that. Mefurdad is also washing pirda, a mule that they don't produce, like a mule is sterile. It doesn't produce any children. The same way he's claiming they don't provide any benefit to the empire. What? Say what?
You
might think then he continues to Achashverosh, maybe at least fine, there's not maybe one large province full of Jews, but maybe there's a smaller province that's full of them, or maybe at least one city. One village even. Nope. Bein Ha'amim, they're completely scattered among the nations. There's no particular place that you can point to and say this is a Jewish area more than others. Maharsha asks, still, I mean, that's already included in Mefuzah Bein Ha'amim. So he explains differently. This part of Haman's argument is, he's saying to Achashverosh, so you're going to think, okay, well, instead of killing all of them, how about we just bring them all and concentrate them all in one particular province of the kingdom? We designate that as the one big Jewish ghetto or whatever. So Haman says, no, they're so thoroughly scattered among the nations that it would be impossible to gather them all to one place. Bein Ha'amim, so it's a Bein Ha'amim. So then you're going to argue maybe there are some of the Jews outside of your empire and you're not going to be able to get at them. No, they're throughout all the provinces of your empire, of your kingdom, meaning in other words, he's telling them there are no Jews anywhere else outside the Persian Empire. So if you exterminate them, Rachmana Litzlan, then there's nobody left anywhere. There's none of them left anywhere else. The Gemara mentions in other places, by the way, that Bederach Klal, the Eibishter doesn't do that. Usually, you have throughout most of the time of Golus, the Eibishter has always arranged that there are Jews in different countries where some of them, even when in one place they try to wipe out Jews and another place Jews are safe, and it means the other Jews can help the Gashmius, also Beruchnius. It means that the Goyim themselves in the one place sometimes don't even bother because they say, what's the good of it? We're not going to be able to wipe out the Jews anyhow. The Gemara mentions that in Pesachim, for example. But here, it wasn't like that. Here, they were all under the rule of the Persian Empire. Yeah. The pasuk continues, but you see it with a fact, because you see the entire Jewish people accepted Purim on themselves. If you had people who weren't affected by the whole thing in the first place, because they're living in other parts of the world, then why would they have accepted Purim? They were in no danger in the first place. He continues, v'daseim shonus mikol am. He continues, their laws are different than every other people. Now, it doesn't just mean, Maharsha explains, doesn't just mean that he's saying that they have a different religion than everybody else. Because then it would say, daseim shonus mikol dos, that their religion is different than any other religion. No, he's saying, v'daseim shonus mikol am, meaning that their religion causes them to be different than every other nation, causes them to be antisocial against the other nations, as he's going to go and accuse. They won't eat with us. They won't drink with us. They won't intermarry with us. They won't give us in marriage their daughters. Unfortunately, that wasn't completely true at that time. We find not long after that, where there was a problem in the times of Ezra, that there were intermarriages going on, and whether they were going on at the time when Haman made his accusations, I don't know, but that part at least wasn't necessarily always 100% accurate, but yeah. We do have to realize, by the way, we talked about before, that all of this is taking place during the 18 years when the building of the Second Beis Hamikdash was suspended, and there was the real question that many people were wondering whether there is going to be a Gaula after all. Remember, Ahasuerus had made his party thinking that the 70 years are up, and there was no Gaula yet. And it was still another, from that party, there was still quite a number of years more, another 13 years until the rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash was continued. Now it's a few years later, but still, there was a tremendous strain on people's emunah, wondering whether maybe Taka the Eibishter has Rachmana Litzlan given up on us. So therefore, the Yoshnu Min HaMitzvahs, you know, there's a certain rationale for that. And nevertheless, still, Haman is saying that they still don't eat and drink and intermarry with us. He continues, that's Dosya Melech Enim Osim. When he continues, they don't follow the laws of the king. So that means also he's saying they don't do like this. The king, you, the king, you want to charge them taxes. You want to be able to have them do work on behalf of the government and whatever. And they don't. Demakula l'cholashata b'shihi pi. They use as an excuse the entire year, Shihi stands for Shabbos Hayom, Pihi stands for Pesach Hayom. So anytime you want them to do useful work, they'll claim today is our Shabbos, today is our Pesach, and we can't. So obviously that part is not true, but this is one of his exaggerations, but obviously there's a kernel of truth to it, because there are Shabbosim and there are Pesachs. And it was a long time, by the way. You find, for example, Roman writers a few hundred years later who also can't even conceive of the idea of a Shabbos, and it's one of the big things when they're writing and making fun of Jews in their times. One of the big things is that Jews are lazy because they have a Shabbos. It took time for the rest of the world to catch up with the idea that there needs to be, but yeah. Anyway, why does he mention Dafka Shabbos and Pesach? Why among the so Maharsha points out Shabbos you're also in any malacha, and Pesach they pretend as though it's Pesach all the time. With Pesach we went out from being enslaved to Paros, so now they're using that as an excuse. We're free from having to do anything for the king. Maybe there was that too. Yeah, could be. So v'layahad kragla malka. So in short, they're not paying taxes to the king. He continues, it's not appropriate for the king to leave them be. Meaning Rashi says, "Ein shoveh, ein noa ben chashash lanicham." It's not proper, and there's no reason you should be concerned that it's good to leave them alone. Meaning when he says the word v'lamelech, means the ochlu the achli v'shosu the rabu, when they do eat and drink and they drink a little too much, the nafki v'yasu v'shuka, they go out into the street and sit in the street umuvazu lo the malka, and they mock the king. So that's v'lam melech ein shor v'lam nifam. Not just that they're acting in this what he's claiming antisocial and so forth way, but they do it in a way to be mevaze you the king. For example, Dovah Acha, another way of looking at it, V'lamelech ein shor v'lanicham, she'im v'afilu nofel zvuv b'koseh shalecha mehem, if a fly falls into a Jew's cup, Zerka, he'll throw out the fly, but she'sehu and I'll drink the wine. V'im adoni ha'melech negev b'koseh shalecha mehem, but if my majesty the king were to touch a cup of wine that belongs to one of them, chote b'kautev, and she'sehu, throw it on the ground and not drink it, because it becomes yayin nesach. So Rasa Haman is claiming that that's showing bizoyin for the king. He continues, Imam, so we see, in other words, that he was an expert at Lashon Hara, at crafting exactly the right arguments that would appeal to Achashverosh. He continues, Imam al-Malach Tov yikotiv la'abdam, if it pleases the king, then it should be written to destroy them, v'aseres halachim kikar kesef v'gomer, and I'll pay 10,000 kikar of silver to the royal treasury. So why, what's going on with these 10,000 kikar kesef? It's known and revealed to the Eveshter who spoke and the world came into being that this Haman HaRasha in the future is going to go out and weigh out silver for the right to kill the Jews. Therefore, Hashem preempted that by putting the shkolim, the matzah shekel that we give to the Beis Mikdash, earlier than Haman's shkolim. Which means, Maharsha says, we don't just mean Urdiyu as in Urdiyu in history, that the Nidvas and Mishkan were 1,000 years before these events. We mean also Urdiyu every year, in the sense, as the Gemara says, behind the stand, Be'echa Ba'adam, Hashemim ala Shkolim, Ba'ala Kalayim, Rosh Chodesh Adar, every year, they would announce about the Shkolim, that it's time to start giving you Matzah Shekel, and they would give it out, they would give it throughout Chodesh Adar, and also for Kalayim, that it's the time when crops in the field are starting to ripen, are starting to sprout, so therefore, that's the time when you'll be able to recognize whether there's Kalayim in your field, and therefore you'll go and pull it out. So the point is, Maharsha says, The fact that you have to give the Machta Shekel before Rosh Chodesh Nissen, that's Minat Torah, because you have to have Rosh Chodesh Nissen is the beginning of the new fiscal year of the Beis Mikdash. The Korbanos of the coming year have to be brought with the new money that starts beginning Rosh Chodesh Nissen. However, why Davka did the Chachamim make it that you announce it a full month earlier, Rosh Chodesh Adar? That was Hashem had put that idea in the head of the Chachamim of earlier generations in order that comes about. So they're announcing and they're starting to give the Shkolim before even the date when Haman was plotting. And this is, of course, why we have Parshas Shkolim every year, that time of year, on or before Rosh Chodesh Adar, in memory of that, and it also comes before Parshas Zohar, when we remember about Haman and about Amalek. Tosfos later on in the sugya makes the calculation, by the way, 10,000 kikar, a kikar has 3,000 shkolim in it. So when you calculate it, Tosfos says it comes out, it's equal to the matzah shekel of 600,000 Jews. Now there is a bit of discussion about that, because the matzah shekel of 600,000 Jews comes out to 100 kikar, as we have in Parshas Kudeh. Here we're saying 10,000 kikar. So there's different explanations, including one explanation is Tosfos means not just what a person would give 1 year, but what a person would give during an average lifespan. A person is first chayav to give matzah shekel when he's 20 years old, and the average person, you mentioned they say anybody having shivim shana, so your average person is going to be giving matzah shekel 50 consecutive years during his lifetime, and therefore it works out. If you assume also Bach talks about over there in Agoyes HaBach, that actually Haman's kikarim may have been the regular kind of kikar, which is half the size of the kikar HaKodesh, 3,000 shekel, his kikarim, therefore, is only 1,500 shkolim, and 10,000 of those, therefore, equals 50 times the matzah shekel of 600,000 Jews. There are other mafoshim, we'll make a different calculation. We find that the erech, when a person says, Hare erki al erki alai, or erech ploni alai, that I pledge my or somebody else's erech to the Beis Mikdash, so you look up the table in Parshas Bechol Kosei, and you give the appropriate amount. So for a man from 20 to 60, the amount is 50 shekel. So if you calculate 50 shekel times 600,000 Jews between the age of 20 and 60, then you get to 10,000 kikars. That's an alternate way of calculating it. Anyway, the point is that the Eved should put the matzah shekel to preempt that the schus of that should preempt what Haman is trying to do over here. Okay. The pasuk continues by Yomer Hamalach LaHaman Akesef Nosun Lach. The king says to Haman, "The money is given to you, meaning I don't need your money." And the people is given over to you to do with them whatever you please. Tosfos points out, by the way, the word Hakesef is the same gematria as the word Ha'etz. So as Shmuel is speaking to Haman, he's hinting to him that you're going to wind up Hakesef Nosun Lach, Ha'etz Nosun Lach. The gallows is given to you, and you're going to wind up on it. So it's one of those things that he's speaking without even realizing the full import of what he's saying. Anyway, Amrav. So why is it? Why is Hashverus refusing the money? Amrav Abba Bakahana, Moshal da Hashverus for Haman Lamah Davidoyma. What is this Moshal like? The Shnei Bnei Adam. You have two people. Echad Yeshle Tel B'Sadeu. One has a mound of dirt in his field. The Echad Yeshle Choritz B'Sadeu, and the other one has a ditch in his field. So the one who has the mound of dirt, which he doesn't need, says to him, says the gears of the Bala Choritz, means he actually speaks directly to the one who owns the ditch. Without that, is the way it's printed in the Gemara, he's just saying generically, if only there was somebody who had a ditch that he could give me, that I could the dumb him, and I'd even be willing to pay for it, so I'd have a place to dump this dirt. Or Bal Choritz, and meanwhile the one with the ditch is saying, me yitzim, he tells ever, say, chsadi, or bedum him, if only I had a pile of dirt that I could use to fill up this ditch. L'yomim nizdav gushneim, eventually the two of them meet up. So the one with the ditch asks, that says to the one who owns the mound of dirt, sell me your pile of dirt. If only you'd take it for free, I've been trying to get rid of it for a long time. So the same thing, in other words, so the same way, Haman and Ahasuerus, each one had a reason of their own to hate the Jews and want to get rid of them. And now that Ahasuerus sees, you have somebody who's ready to do the job, then good. I didn't even need your money. I'm willing to give them to you. I'm willing to give you to them, to give them to you for free. Mefoshim point out over here Marshall points out, Anaf Yosef brings over here from Rabbi Azariah Figo, who points out the author of Din al-Itim, who points out that the point of the Marshall is also, so you look at it, Haman and Ahasuerus had two different perspectives on the Jewish people. Haman Ahasuerus saw the Jewish people like a mound of dirt, a high and important thing. So he wants to be rid of them, but at least he understands that they are important. Mashenth and Haman sees them as lowly and degraded, as he just finished saying to Ahasuerus, and so he sees them as a ditch. So therefore, that's why the Gemara uses that particular marshal. With that said, though, there are also Mephoshim who explain that Ahasuerus meant it as a, I think Ben Yehoyada says, he did mean it as a shtickle in his own rishus sticker way. He meant it as with a certain grudging respect for the Jewish people. I'm not going to sell them to you as though they were slaves or something. Esther later on says, so instead of, I recognize that they are an important people, so I'm not going to sell them for money. I don't need your money. You can do whatever you want with them for free. So the Gemara continues, So then the pasuk says, Yosa HaMelech HaSchabato, so the king removed his ring and gave it to Haman, which means that he's giving him full power to do whatever he wants. Because you have to remember, a ring in those times usually had a signet. It usually had the person's personal seal attached to it. So you give somebody your ring, it was the equivalent of saying they have the right to stamp documents and sign documents in your name with full carte blanche to do whatever they want. The Gemara, in fact, mentions in Rav Metzia, we're going to have it in a few days in Daf Yomi, that, for example, a person would not usually lend out his ring, his signet ring like that, to somebody else, because he's afraid the guy's going to forge documents in his name with it. So Omer of Abu Bakahana, G'dola, Saras HaTabas, Yosemem Ches Nevi'im B'Zayin Nevi'is, Shinisnabu Lahem L'Yisrael. This removal of the ring had more of an effect, had more of a positive effect on the Jewish people than all the 48 Nevi'im and 7 Nevi'is who prophesied to the Jewish people, as the next piece of the Gemara goes on and deals with. Shemem Ches Nevi'im B'Zayin Nevi'is, Shinisnabu Lahem L'Yisrael, Lo Yachzuru L'Mutam, L'Mutav. All those 55 Nevi'im and Nevi'is, they gave Nevu'ah to the Jewish people, and they didn't get them to fully do tshuva. But now this removal of the ring, everybody realized the chips are down, and everybody did complete shuvah. So that had a much stronger effect on the Jewish people. In fact, Maharsha says the point of it is also they realize now what the depth of hatred that Achshverosh has for them. Usually, in other words, a person is going to buy something from somebody else, so we usually have to give a mashkin. And here, Haman is offering a mashkin. He's offering the 10,000 kicker, and Achshverosh is turning it down. So therefore, they realize we're really in trouble. Achshverosh is really out to get us, and therefore, that had a very powerful effect on them. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Chesed Beis. We were learning yesterday about the redivision of Eretz Yisrael, the Moshe Mashiach. So the Rebbe continues on that theme that when we do the Avodah of Machta Eretz Yisrael B'Shlemos, then we go dance into Eretz HaKodesh, and we each take our part in the division of Eretz Yisrael into the 13 Shvatim, like we learned about yesterday, which that division is accomplished through Hashem himself, as the Gemara says about it, that the original division of Yeshua's times was accomplished by Yeshua and Elazar. They had the Urim B'Tumim and they had the girdle and all that, but still it was being done by Bos of Adam under the direction of Hashem. Here, the Gemara says, Lost of Love, the division is going to be done by HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'atzma Mechalak Lahem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mechalak Lahem Ba'atzma. Hashem personally is going to give each person his portion. As the Gemara learns from a pasuk in Yechezkel that says, "Ve'elo machlokosam ne'um Hashem alekim," and Hashem says, "These are going to be their divisions." Continuing with halachas about Shabbos, we were talking about salting food before. We were talking about salting food before Shabbos. So we said the basic rule is if the salt actually has an effect on the food, like softening it or moderating the sharpness or whatever, then you can't salt it at all on Shabbos. You can only just dip like piece by piece in salt, as opposed to, we said, if it just gives it a salty taste. So now you have, for example, you have, let's say, lettuce or zucchinis or cucumbers or whatever that you're, things that when you're making dips, when you're making onion dip and things like that, those kinds of things, you are allowed to put salt in them shortly before the Suda, because you also put other ingredients in them. You put oil, you put vinegar or whatever, like when you make the salad dressing. So those weaken the salt, and therefore it's not like ma'am. You wouldn't be able to leave them salted for considerable time, because that's not samuch l'soda. But in other words, before we were talking about putting only salt on them, now you're talking about when, let's say, you're making a dressing that includes salt and other ingredients, that you're allowed to samuch l'soda. So it depends. Is the fish one? So raw fish b'chlal is mukta on Shabbos, except maybe to the extent that you can eat it as sushi, I don't know. But b'chlal, b'derech chlal, raw fish is also is mukta on Shabbos, because what are you going to do with it? You can't cook it. So yeah, but there are certain kinds, maybe like certain kinds of like anchovies and herrings and small fish like that, that maybe they're edible raw to some extent. So then yeah. Okay.